Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz Movies Podcast, only on the Oz Network.
We're sorry, we don't want to be doing this either, but you're stuck with us now because we got to talk about Independence Day Resurgence. Some resurgence going on in the background as we wrap up Bad Movie Month with the one movie we're all going to agree is bad. And surprisingly enough, this is the best reviewed movie of the month, which just tells you reviewers know nothing. A sequel to Independence Day, 20 years after the fact. And I don't want to waste any more time. I just want to say, my name is Colin, and this is your Independence Day Researchers Recap. Jeff Goldblum's back, but you wouldn't know it because he phones it in. Bill Pullman's back, but you wouldn't know it because he's mentally unstable. Vivica Fox is back, but you wouldn't know it because she dies for some reason. Judd Hirsch is back, but all he does is drive a bunch of kids around. Will Smith's not back because he was the one smart one to not do the movie. The Earth has a moon base, and the aliens' fear is shot down. Then the bad aliens from part one come back. Their ship destroys half the world. Bunch of young adult characters who we couldn't care less about are stuck inside the alien ship. Everyone else easily comes up with a plan to beat the aliens. They destroy the ship. The aliens' queen runs around the desert before dropping dead. Then we end with a sequel bait nobody asked for and wanted. Done. I'm Ben in this movie. What about you, Ben?
Ben. Good night. and my name is Ben, and...
Oh.
Jesus.
This is...
Shit.
I'm going to jump right into my backstory here. Because anybody who was alive in 1996 definitely saw Independence Day. Anybody who was alive in 96 even remembers the promotion, like one of those brilliantly promoted movies ever. Oh,
probably the best. I'd argue the best.
Yeah, if it's not the best, it's in the top five for sure. I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, the movie itself is just
brilliant
90s entertainment, but it is brilliant to a certain level.
I think it made my sixth best of all time, fifth best.
But like, there was so much time, and I remember there was talk way back in the late 90s, early 2000s about doing a sequel. They eventually announced that they'd do a 20th anniversary sequel. There was even hope for Will Smith coming back for a while. It looked like he was going to do it, but then he didn't. He did Suicide Squad. Regardless, this is, like you mentioned last week, it's a movie that I wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to see this, but I was still there opening day, and I still remember that when I went, it was because... my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, had like some girls party, you know?
Some girls
parties that girls do, you know? Like with Tupperware, pillow fights or something. I don't know what they do. Either way, brother and I just have a thing. Anytime that his wife would do one of her girly parties, we'd usually go see like some watching movie. It really started with Taken. We're like, we need to get away from this girly party and see Liam Neeson punch somebody in the throat. And then it just became Rambo after that. And then eventually it's like, well, Independence Day is out this week. Let's watch that. I can remember this movie ending, and it's not like I hated the movie. It was just, oh, that was not what I expected. I counted. I've seen this movie four times.
What?
And I keep going back.
Oh, shame.
The second time I watched it was because, Jamie, you should watch Independence Day 2. And she's like, okay. And I showed it to her. I'm like, that was actually worse than I remembered. And then the third time was when we watched Independence Day, like last year, I think. And I'm like, oh, we might as well watch the second. Maybe it gets better. I don't know why I keep thinking this movie might work. It doesn't. That's it. This was painful. I watched this in three shifts all in one day. I just had to take breaks throughout this movie to be like, I don't have any more in me right now.
Yeah. Like, again, as I said last week, like, I can see the potential for sequels, and this is definitely one of those movies that a sequel needed to be done pretty soon after the original. Like, it's sort of like, we didn't really touch on that last week with Speed. Like, at least they did that 3 years after. Like, if that was like 20 years later, then, you know, whatever. But like, the issues you have with legacy sequels a lot of the time, particularly if it's a standalone movie, is you can't replicate the charm and the feeling of the first one. It's so rare. Like, that's a big problem with Dumb and Dumber 2. Like, I mean, again, that turned out better than I think most people thought it would be, but it still wasn't that great. And this is just one that like took way too long. I don't even think if we did the original, I could curtail my thoughts on the opening of that movie and everything in an hour, let alone the whole thing. But like this, like when they announced it, again, it's similar reaction I had to, I remember when they announced Jurassic World. I'm like, okay, somewhat excited, but do we need it? Like Twisters, it's a movie I love, the original, but then like, I don't think I've ever really had a movie where they've announced a sequel and I've lost my shit at. Even when the Star Wars sequels got announced, I legitimately thought it was April Fool's Day. Because I'm like, no, it's freaking July. Like, what's going on? So you drink and you're like, okay, well, we'll give it a chance. I will say this movie had some pretty decent marketing. Because I remember the website behind it where it went into heavy detail about the 20 years that had passed between what they called the War of 96 to that. And like, that got me a bit more excited. Cause I'm like, okay, I like the background. You've explained this. It's very interesting. They did that very well with the Jurassic World sequels. And if you read into like the history of the websites and everything, the marketing was very clever. It kind of, you drank the Kool-Aid. But then I remember seeing this movie. And again, similar to you, I don't think I left hating it, but I definitely left going, what was that? That wasn't Independence Day. That was something.
And it was like walking out of Terminator Genesis. You're like, oh, well,
I never saw that in the big screen. But it was like, it was, but like, it was kind of like my reaction to the Star Wars sequels, because I didn't want to hate the Star Wars sequels because they're Star Wars movies. You're like, no, I kind of dislike these, but they're Star Wars movies. I shouldn't dislike them. At least with Jurassic World Dominion, I was kind of like, yeah, that was shit. I'm like, I'm going to own this. This wasn't a good movie. I don't care that it's a Jurassic Park movie. This wasn't good. But the difference with this is I then drank all the haterade of this movie. And the more and more I thought about, like, yeah, that movie sucked. And then a few years ago, I watched the first one. Oh, fuck, this movie's great. And then a couple of years had passed. And I'm like, okay, time to give
this. You did it too.
But hang on. Wait a minute. I'm like, I'm going to give it another chance. I literally got 45 minutes into a movie. I'm like, I can't do it.
Oh.
And I never touched it since. So I said to you last week before we recorded this, I'm like, I might not make this through this movie. I did. I unfortunately did this time around. So this is only the second full time I've seen it. There's just everything about this movie is wrong. Like, it's not even like, I don't even think Will Smith would have saved this movie. Because like, you say Jeff Goldblum phones it in. My issue with Jeff Goldblum in this movie is Jeff Goldblum. He's not David Levinson in this movie. Jeff Goldblum is Jeff Goldblum. He's just playing himself.
I don't even think he's Jeff Goldblum. I think he's like a bored Jeff Goldblum.
I agree with that because like this, like I see a lot of criticisms of the original. I watched a few like retrospectives of the original of this movie, which the original gets a lot more criticism than people realize. It's got nostalgia to it, but the original didn't get as much love critically as you think. It's not like a Jurassic Park, which kind of everybody's like, oh, critically, it's amazing. Independence Day has never really got that love. This movie made people love the original more. But, like, people often say, Jeff Goldblum just plays Ian Malcolm in Independence Day. No, he doesn't. He's a completely different character. He's got that geekiness about him. He says, must go faster, must go faster. He's not Dr. Malcolm in the first movie. Anyway, different character in this film. Bill Pullman. Love Bill Pullman. I'm the only person who would probably rank him above Bill Paxton. Love Bill Paxton as well. Don't get me wrong. But, like, you waste Bill Pullman in this movie. You spend the entire movie going, oh, he's going to do the speech again. And he doesn't. Don't even get me started on how the aliens watched the speech at the beginning of the movie because that wasn't recorded. You've got Vivica A. Fox, who you just throw off a building. Judd Hirsch is basically Jason Patrick. Let's hang out with little children and pedos. We've got the general from the first movie in a waving scene because why not? You literally spent half of this movie going, were they in the first movie? I mean, what's his face? Don't even get me started on freaking Brett Spiner. Like, I mean, you just make that a complete laughing stock. Oh, and you like, you get Liam Hemsworth. At least if you get Chris Hemsworth, this movie might be 2 points higher on the Richter scale. Like, as an Australian, I want to apologize for Liam Hemsworth. And then everybody else in this film has got no, like, whoever the guy is to play Will Smith's son, this is Will Smith. Jaden Smith doesn't have Will Smith's charisma, but he's got 1,000 times more charisma than this piece of wood. Who's this woman? She's terrible. Like, I hate this movie. It's an insult to the original.
Breathe, breathe. I want to quickly touch on the cast, because again, Will Smith didn't want to come back, or he says, oh, I was obligated to Suicide Squad. Guaranteed he read the script and said, oh, I'm not doing that movie. He made the right
move. And he read the script of Suicide Squad and thought that was better. And I defend Suicide Squad.
But like this movie, much like what you're going to understand, not the time recording this, but by the time this is released, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is like, let's bring back people that you have no reason to bring back other than cheap nostalgia bit. The general, like you mentioned, why is he in this? You went out of your way to get, and I understand the actor died right after this, right? So maybe they had more scenes.
You can tell he's dead in this movie.
The movie killed him. But like you got Vivica Foss back, you got him back. You have two kids that you should be bringing back.
Mae Whitman even had to come out and be like, I don't even know why. Like she was like, yeah, I was confused.
They never called her. Yeah, and there's stories online saying, well, they didn't think she was attractive enough, which
Mae
I don't
Whitman,
think is the case.
I grew up loving Mae Whitman. I thought she was hot. Oh,
look at her now. She's fantastic.
I think she is,
and
too.
She had just made a movie called The Duff at the time, which was like her first lead role, which is like a surprise hit. She had done Scott Pilgrim versus the World a couple of years prior to that. You know, she was on the TV show Parenthood. I'm actually even bigger fan
attractive?
Of her.
Sorry, but she's a very attractive woman.
She's very attractive. Yeah. I mean, and she's on a podcast now. She co-hosts a podcast on Friday Night Lights. When she wasn't on Friday Night Lights, she's just like, I'm a celebrity, but I'm a huge fan of Friday Night Lights. She literally is such a big fan that she broke down in tears when somebody gifted her a picture of Taylor Kitsch. You know, like that she's so cool in real life and so funny. And again, very attractive. And she's a bigger star now. So why not bring her back? And I don't even know about the guy who played the Will Smith stepson in the original. I know he was on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as well. Maybe he's not acting anymore, but I feel like this movie, you have all these characters that are split up, and then you've got all these young characters, the Hemsworth crew, which includes original characters, but the audience can't feel nostalgic about new actors playing characters for kids. Yet if you had brought those actors, they may have been like, oh, is that the same kid? They're grown up now. Even if the role was boring, even if the performance was boring, you still get that excitement of, hey, it's the kid from the original. This just feels like a movie within a movie.
Not defending Jurassic World Dominion, but at least they got the memo and let's get the original three and put them with the new three. Like, I mean, like at least you do that. Ghostbusters Afterlife. I haven't seen Frozen Empire at the time recording this, but yeah, like it's just, and this is a thing because you don't care about these characters. This movie is just so rushed. It's laughably rushed. Like people shit on the original for so many different aspects, but like the original had tension. It built up a sense of awe. The destruction scenes are iconic because you get to a level where there's this like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? This movie just passes over. Like, I love Roland Emmerich as a director. I love a good end of the world movie. But even he's phoning it in. He's just like a 5-minute destruction scene, which I remember going, well, at least the destruction scene was cool. It's laughable. They're coming into freaking Earth. Oh, look, there's the Patronus Towers crashing into London. Ah, isn't it funny? They like to go for the landmarks. Lol. Like, I mean, it's just, and like the best, watch the honest trailer, because like the best part of that whole bit is where they play the scene where it's like, that thing's 3,000 miles long. How did we miss it? And then Epic Voice Guy's basically like, no, seriously, how did you miss it? That's the size of America. Like, don't gel over that. Like, it's just, like, this is the thing. You can't try and do a nostalgia-baiting sequel when you just have the characters that come back who are just a shadow of themselves. The new people are not there. There is not legitimately a likable person in this film. And like, I completely forgot.
Judd Hirsch is likable.
No, Judd Hirsch annoys me in this film because I think even Judd Hirsch.
He's no different than the original.
I completely disagree. Judd Hirsch had heart in the original. That scene when he's like sitting down with what's his face who ended up being in Homeland, who like, I'm not Jewish, nobody's perfect. Like just little things like that. He's kind of got like heart to him. Where he's like,
yeah, the Area 51 scene. Yeah, that's great.
Like here, like he's just laughable. It's like, lol, kids. Like you've got Diet Chloe Meltz or whatever her name is here, the blonde girl. Like it's just, oh, just so many things that are just, oh. And like the woman who's not Mae Whitman, who is she? She's annoying. Oh, let's pander to China because we want money to make there. Like,
which a lot of movies are doing at this time, but a lot of movies did it a lot better than this because I'm going to point this out before I even get in the movie. They get two Chinese actors in the movie, one of which is the pilot who basically everybody talks to her and I swear she never does anything more than brief glimpses on screen. And the other one is like the commander. Oh, we're going to have him commanding he's like the first character to die in this movie. And then what's the first city that they destroy in this movie? Hong Kong.
That's Singapore.
So
actually.
Why was it? Why was this? Okay, so close. Sorry, I'm racist now. But either way, you're going to their region. You destroy them. It's like
it's
you're
in
not
Asia.
Doing anything. You're not doing anything to play to that audience.
Yeah.
And like you should be doing. The Meg did it better, and I don't like the Meg.
Don't say those words in this podcast. But like it's even like. I stand by that Bill Pullman, greatest movie president of all time. In the first movie. This movie, not so
Harrison
much.
Ford.
I stand by it. I mean, I just rewatched Air Force One, great president, but I still stand by Bill Pullman, greatest movie president of all time. But, like, the woman president in this? I mean, see my little finger? More personality and charisma. Terrible.
She was Mrs. Dennis Quaid from The Day After Tomorrow. And we all remember her from that,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. But then, like, the laughable plot of, the president and everybody in the presidential line of succession has died. You're now the president, Mr. Guy who was in Armageddon.
William Fichtner.
Which I always thought he was in the first movie because like he's in every 90s action movie, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, at least they brought back him from Independence Day. And I looked up like, oh, wait, he's not. Just get this movie over and done with, Colin. I'm too angry.
I've got notes and I'm going to pick and choose which things I even talk about here. So first thing, I just want to get this out of the way before, because this will probably be one of my few rants throughout it. What I knew instantly walking out of the theater didn't work with this movie is that the first Independence Day, we talked about Civil War recently. What was interesting about that is that you are telling this type of story that seems like that could never happen here in a place that you live. The first movie was, we're real world 1996. If aliens invade, this would be Roland Emmerich, the entire premise him and Dean Devlin came up with. By the way, Dean Devlin came back first time working with Roland Emmerich, and since what, Godzilla here, he didn't add anything to this either. But the premise was they were at a press conference and we're talking about aliens when they're promoting Stargate. And he's like, can you just imagine what would happen if aliens just appeared above all the biggest cities in the world? And like, I think we have, they did a press conference and they said, we have our idea for our next movie. That's what the basis is. Our real world. This entire movie is futuristic. And I get the idea they're going with, we had alien technology, but no audience is going to identify with what's happening in the movie when there's moon bases and warp speed and flying cars.
Yeah, look, yeah, I agree to a point. Like one thing that I'm not defending this film, but like this is where I understand. And if I don't know if the website still exists where they kind of promoted, like, you know, they filled in the gaps for 20 years. This is where, like, if you read that, that's a part where I'm like, okay, you can understand that. Because, like, yeah, if aliens invaded and then we destroyed them in 1996, we would be getting their technology and being able to use it. So I get why they do that. But
they go too far.
But no, they do. Because, again, that goes back to my sense of almost wonderment and amazement. I mean, what's among the best scenes of Independence Day? It's that montage of the fireball, and then you see the humans' reactions in New York and LA and Washington of the spaceship coming out of the fire and that shock and awe and just everything about it. The survival stories of everybody like leaving, like Judd Hirsch in the first one, like everybody's trying to get out of Washington. We're the only schmucks trying to get in. Like, I mean, like things like that. Whereas this movie, it's just like, lol, little kid in a bus. Oh, you've destroyed Singapore. Oh, you've destroyed London. Like, it's just cheap gags, as you say. It's passed over so quickly. Like, Roland Emmerich was on crack in this movie. It's so quick and fast. And, like, the most exciting part that you want to see a movie of is when they're in Africa and you see this, like, warlord. Yeah. Like, we had to kill them from behind. Like, I want to see that movie.
And that's one of the few things I like in this movie because again, that's where the movie is filling the gaps. Just dropping us into this is all our technology. And you could have done that with a moon base, but the problem is you open the movie on a moon base. You open with something we can't identify with. Show us a little bit of real world stuff first. But first thing, the movie literally opens with, which I'm okay, it's just a dream. I'm overanalyzing here. Aliens are watching footage of Bill Pullman from the first Independence Day. Footage that never existed because he was on a megaphone and they were communicating via Morse code. So I'm like, okay, it was your dream. But later on, we see the aliens listening to this speech that was only over a megaphone with no technology available to record.
Yeah.
They didn't do this over radio. These things make no sense in it. The world is completely at peace now. The president says that we're basically saying, hey, we're living in the future. Big Willie is on the wall because of the White House. You're going to put some guy. Is there any other random soldier? I'm sorry. Yes, he saved the world, but they're going to put his picture in the White House outside of
Jeff Goldblum also saved the world. He was there.
Yeah, where's
with
his picture?
Like, in all seriousness, when you got Judd Hirsch selling his book, the guy said, He technically did. He gave Jeff Goldblum the idea of get off the cold floor. You're going to catch a cold. So like,
and he also gave him the motivation to do something. Exactly. Don't just lay down and die.
So like, again, this is just complete, utter baiting the audience of, we couldn't get him, but here's a photo of him. Because, yeah, the White House puts pictures of the presidents up on the wall.
Yeah.
They don't, like, why? Like, no.
And this thing's 9 feet tall, too. It's not even just like a picture.
They should have a picture of Mae Whitman on the wall there. Remember her?
Yeah. So we get introduced to our young adult. I know this was the craze in 2016. This is Harry Potter, Divergent, Hunger Games, all those things. We got to get somebody from Hunger Games in here. I don't care. These are the kids from the original movie. There's nothing to connect them. You can say these are the kids from the original movie. We don't know anything about them. And then we have all these weird backstories between them. It's like, for some reason, Liam Hemsworth hates Will Smith's stepson and she's engaged. I'm like, I don't need any of this stuff and I don't care. And all of them are boring in this movie. Liam Hemsworth probably has the most charisma out of any of these young actors.
No charisma.
I will say, the guy who's his friend has a couple of good moments in this movie.
John Oliver, he's kind of funny.
That's what he is? Oh, that guy. Okay, yeah, no, I like him. One of the few things I like about this. So the moon base is crashing, but Liam Hemsworth comes in for the save because we got a Jason Patrick him and have him force down your throat as an action hero. And then we get a mildly racist moment, which I'm sure played really well in the Chinese crowds, where the guy comes in, the general of the moon base or whatever. Interesting idea. Worlds are completely at peace. So you're actually going to have a Chinese military commander in charge of Americans. But then he says, he knows we don't speak Chinese, right? Chinese is not a language. Mandarin, you know, Cantonese, but we don't speak Chinese. It's a little
Singapore's
bit
also not in China, Colin, just to let you know.
Exactly, yes. But yet they were speaking Mandarin in Singapore, so they at least knew the language right in the subtitles. We have aliens are in prison now. We get introduced to the African ship, which that's a very cool idea that like the one ship landed. Stuff you didn't know what was going on in the first movie, this ship landed and it was drilling. It was in the middle of something and the other ones are just protecting it. We get the African warlord, he's killing people behind. We get, you call him Diet John Oliver. I like him. We get not his wife or ex-wife, Jeff Goldblum's
ex-wife. Why doesn't she come back? That annoys me, but she doesn't come back.
I liked her. There's not even a mention of her in this. Apparently the novelization says she died in a car wreck. So maybe the actress didn't want to come back. I actually don't mind the actress that they have here. And I even think she's one of the few characters that's written decently, but you don't care about, does she have a relationship? Did they even identify, like, did he date her before? Are they dating after this? I like the idea that she's this scientist. There's even some scientists today where people, that's crazy talk. And we do get kind of the fun moment later on with the kid saying, my dad said none of that alien stuff ever happened. Judd Hirsch, like, did you look out the window right now?
Sorry to interrupt. She's the one who played, Constance,
is she dead?
No, she's still acting too. So
maybe she just turned it down. I don't know.
Moved on to Gossip Girl and everything along those lines. But I mean, yeah, why not bring her back?
We get Judd Hirsch, who's, I like the book thing. It's ridiculous, it's cheap, but him, that's how I saved the world. And then it's like an old folks home and nobody goes, I got books here for $9.95. Your grandkids will love them. I'll even autograph for you. They also introduce another idea, which again, nothing's explained in this movie. I'm not for every movie needs to be over 2 hours, but there's other stuff you could have cut out of this movie to explain. What is this thing with everybody being orphans? Like, are they saying that everybody who works on the moon were orphans? But I like this idea that like there are kids who just grew up that they'd be the children of the war of 96. Like people were made orphans because of this. And Liam Hemsworth is one of them. Bill Pullman is seeing messages. His performance is so bad in this movie. I'm sorry. There are things I like him in. There's things I don't like him in. I'm okay with him in Independence Day. He is terrible in this movie and I can't blame him. They're literally writing a man who has to spend half the movie looking like he has a headache. They're coming. Like it's ridiculous.
That's not, again, Bill Pullman not acting. He's got a headache because he's read the script and he's seeing all the reviews, the bad reviews. Yeah. They're coming. Get me out of this movie.
I like this idea that like the symbol that they're drawing has some connection, but do more of that in this movie. Don't just use it as sequel bait. This ship that appears on the moon,
they were getting a sequel.
this sphere appears on the moon. It's the same thing that everybody's having visions of. Even Roswell, somebody drew this vision. So what's going on? The president says, shoot it down, which I kind of understand their logic. We've been waiting for aliens to appear. But this is like some of the stuff that gets so sci-fi in this movie that Roland Emmerich does in the movie Moonfall, which a lot of people said was a terrible movie. Moonfall is like the Die Another Day of Independence Day type Roland Emmerich filmography. It is it knows it is ridiculous. It knows it is dumb and it is having fun doing it. This movie was like Roland Emmerich had these ideas for Moonfall, but he's like, well, but people want Independence Day. And then later on, he's like, fine, I'm just going to do all those crazy sci-fi ideas I had. People going to the moon and artificial intelligence spheres and stuff like that. But it doesn't work in this movie. It gets so bad later on when the sphere starts talking too. The real alien ship comes. We get all this happening while there's the 4th of July celebration. The Independence Day is barely mentioned in passing in this movie, that this takes place on July 4th. I want those countdowns like the first movie. July 2nd,
yeah.
July 3rd, July 4th. And yes, they rename it Celebration Day or whatever, but it is all in America. Because again, this is Independence Day. This is the day where we save the world. Now celebrate with us in America. Really weird that when the alien ship appears, they see this on the big screen. Wait a second, what's that? And there's already the news ticker on the bottom saying alien ship appears. But then throughout this entire destruction sequence, there are a bunch of people who are just reading their books, fishing. This would be all, there'd be air horns. The media has blasted this before even the president knows, and nobody in the city realized what's going on. I'll disagree with you only. I agree with you that like making the cheap jokes during the sequence is bad, but the idea that we're gonna have this massive ship and that it has this gravity force to it that's sucking buildings up, still, when I watch this, I'm like, that looks good. I like that. And I like the ship kind of having to float below it, watching all this destruction. And also the one line they have where it says, oh, it's touched down over the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, which part? All of it. Like, that's one of the few good lines they have in this movie. I'm going to stop there. I was gonna try to cover the entire movie in one shot, but I need to take a drink of water. So say what you will and criticize everything.
I mean, I don't even know what to add that I've not yelled at. I'm just looking at, like, the problem with the destruction scene. It's like, I saw a comparison to that scene to 2012 and John Cusack driving through like LA and the ridiculousness of that and the plane flying through. But when we did 2012, that is batshit crazy, but it's just kind of like, it's done in a way where it's like, you kind of like the characters. It's kind of silly, over the top fun. I mean, again, I haven't seen Moonfall, but I mean, it kind of knows what it wants to be 2012. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, it's the,
and it doesn't, it also doesn't have to fit in with an established universe. You can do, this is the whole argument with Last Jedi and everything. Well, they did something different and people didn't like it. No, they didn't like it because they did something different poorly.
Mm.
Independence Day 2 should still have some of the Last Jedi still had that Star Wars DNA to it.
But
you know, this doesn't have that Independence Day DNA.
You've nailed it. Because like, I mean, again, remember watching the destruction scene of Independence Day. You have like this whole element of like, just there's silence, there's no score. You're reacting from the survivors. You got Jeff Goldblum, time's up, you know, you've got the Vivica Fox's stripper friend on the thing getting blown up. You know, like there's all those reactions. You've got Jeff Goldblum's workplace guy, oh crap, as he gets crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you only crack up the music when you've got Air Force One kind of chasing from that, and you've got Vivica A. Fox's dog about to get blown, rawr, rawr! Like that's when it picks up, and then that ends with like silence. You go July 3rd, and then you've got the Statue of Liberty like face palm in the water. Like it's just, it's shock, it's awe. You've got time to breathe and kind of take that digestion in. Yeah, we live in a world now where we've sadly seen this destruction in real life. We've had movies like this that kind of done it to death, but like this destruction scene is done in 2 seconds. Like it's like, I get it's different, but like even that's laughable when like Jeff Goldblum that are flying through going, oh, they like to get the landmarks. Like, why aren't they being sucked up? They're in a ship. Like they've got the freaking Burj Khalifa's flying above them and then just like, oh, cool. Like, you know, like just like little things like that. It reminds me of Twister. Like when they're looking like, what is that? We need to get off that road. And you see the semi-trailer, they don't know what it is. And then all of a sudden it's coming towards them. This is just passed off for laughs. Millions upon millions, billions of people are being killed in this. And it's just like, did you pee your pants a little bit? Yeah, I pee my pants.
Oh, whoa! That was a terrible like, line.
It's just silly. It's just dumb. And like, that's what sold so many people in Independence Day. You talk about the marketing. We were seeing the Empire State Building, you know, the US Bank Tower, the White House getting destroyed. You're like, wow, this is just passed off as a, oh, they like to get the landmarks. Lol. Move on. I'm not even saying anything more.
Okay, we also get Vivica Fox in 2 minutes this movie. Now, this is no knock against Vivica Fox. I get why Will Smith is going to turn down this movie. Vivica Fox she had been on The Celebrity Apprentice prior to this. That was her most recent big credit. There's no reason. I guarantee if they had written a decent role for her, she would have said, sign me up. The only reason she's in this movie 2 minutes is because they made the odd decision to take one of the few recognizable characters, major characters of the first movie, and kill her off in 2 minutes. And she's not even the same character. I'm not saying she still has to be a stripper, but she becomes a heart surgeon. Well, like, give us a bit of dialogue. Give that early scene, the first scene she has with the son. She's like, oh, I'm so glad that you went back to school, you know, after all that money came in from us saving the world or something like that.
Yeah.
Nothing about this even screams she's the same. This is the problem. Nobody would know she's the same person unless they recognize her. You have to at least have some moment in the movie that has the audience recognize a character if you don't physically recognize her.
She's looking great, by the way, I'll say, oh, Vivica. But like, yeah, I do like, I think it's the Honest trailer where they make a joking reference of it, like, Vivica A. Fox playing the only stripper who was telling the truth when they said they were only stripping to go to med school. But like, it's, yeah, like, I'm not as against that level of things. I'm just against it. You waste Vivica Fox, this character, and you just pass her off as a nothing. Like, again, you're right. Like, if you aren't as knowledgeable or as obsessed with the original, like an idiot like me, you're not even going to realize, even when like you've got freaking diet Jaden Smith going, mom, like, people are going to be like, oh, was that actually the mum from the first movie? Okay, cool. Yeah. And like, but like one of the, you know, the human elements to the first movie, which no one gives it credit for, you got that great scene when the survivors of LA and like you've got Vivica A. Fox hanging out with the first lady. And, you know, you've kind of got that scene where, you know, the first lady's a bit posh and she's like, oh, what do you do? I'm a dancer. Oh, ballet. And he's all like, and she's all like, no, exotic. She's like, I'm not ashamed of it. Like, you know, I've got to pay for my son. It's good money. And then, you know, I love the bits like, oh, come meet the first lady. And it's like, I didn't think you recognized me. And she's all like, oh, I did. I voted for the other guy. Like, you know, things like that. Like, but that adds a little bit of heart, a little bit of humor to it. You've kind of got the passing reference where you see the Marilyn Whitman Hospital at Area 51. Like, oh, cool, tribute to the first lady. But like, where's Bill Pullman having a headache staring at a picture? Like, one of my favorite, like, underrated moments of that movie is just, like, the way Bill Pullman lies to her in that movie. And you got the whole player of, like, doctor says you're going to be just fine. And she's all like, liar. Mm-hmm. It's sweet and it's sad. And Mae Whitman, is mommy sleeping now? Like, no, that's, like, sad. That used to make me cry as a kid. Like, it's just, you know, this movie, Vivica A. Fox, dead off a building.
But it goes back to that whole, the audience has to identify with something to get enjoyment out of a movie like this. And if you can't identify with the real world because now everything looks like it's 50 years into the future, you still have to identify with the people. What characters they have in the original? A cable repairman, a fighter pilot who couldn't get admitted into NASA if he tried, if he paid, a stripper.
They were racist. It was NASA in the 90s, let's be honest.
and then a trailer park family.
Yeah.
And in this movie, everybody is a superhero. David is now like the leader of alien intelligence. The president is still president. The kids are like the superhero flight squadron of the moon. There isn't one average Joe character in this movie except for Judd Hirsch. It's probably one of the reasons why I'm going to defend Judd Hirsch a little bit more in this movie, because they're not just showing, okay, this is an average guy. It's like they're actually showing that maybe he's even a little bit lower than he was originally because he wrote this book that nobody cares about and he's stuck with a bunch of kids.
What about Mr. Which, by the way, Judd Spiner. Hirsch. What about Brent Spiner? Sorry.
Oh, Brent Spiner. Okay. So, like he was in a coma for 20 years. He comes out and there's a couple moments where he's like, oh, we got this now. Oh, we got alien weapons. I want him being behind. I want him being the guy coming up with the ideas. Like give him a story arc where he's well behind in the times or something like that. And you know, he has to be brought up to speed.
The one thing I do appreciate about it though is that they make him in a gay relationship and it's not one of these ones that's shoved down your throat. It's just like it's a standard human male to male relationship that doesn't need to be shoved down your throat. I like that.
There is one problem with it though. Did you know that the guy he's in the relationship with was in the first Independence Day?
Yes, I was about to say that. He's the same guy who plays that guy in the first movie. Yeah.
Right, but why is he the only character that gets this heroic death? Here we have Vivica Fox being killed off. In this movie, the major characters that are new, like the president gets killed off, Bill Pullman gets killed off. You're killing off the main characters, the ones you're nostalgic about. The one character in this entire movie gets the hero death. And it's this guy who's like, he's kind of a background extra in the first Independence Day. They brought him back, but like give Vivica Fox a better, you know, send off than what she got.
I agree with you completely. I do. But I definitely knew that was a guy. That wasn't like, what's this? Was he in the first movie? Like as soon as I remember watching this, I'm going, oh yeah. Like he was one of the scientist guy in Area 51. Cause like, I will say like
when they changed the characters, like Brett, like he was like the comedic relief, but like he wasn't. They go too far now in this.
It was
like
it wasn't his butt crack for half the time. Yeah,
yeah, like that bit silly. But anyway, and I never watched Star Trek, so he's always the Independence Day guy for me.
I'm going to breeze through most of this here. Thank you.
Just go to the end.
There's the pee your pants thing. They have the kids that Judd Hirsch finds, or they find him, sorry.
Who
which
are
did,
they?
You know, did you know the little girl in the back seat is the star of the Ghostbusters franchise, McKenna Grace?
Oh, young Sheldon's McKenna Grace. I think I did. Didn't we mention it when we brought her up the other week? And the girl.
I think we might have, yeah.
The lead girl. What did I call her before? Diet Chloe. What's her name? Moretz? Is it Chloe Grace Moretz? Chloe Grace Moretz, but it's Diet Chloe Grace Moretz.
She was in Bullet Train last year, and she was actually this girl, like the teenage daughter who doesn't have a license. She was actually quite good in Bullet Train. I can't stand her in this movie. Like, all these kids are horrible. That's the other problem. You don't have any kids you like in this movie.
And
the idea
dogs,
of Judd Hirsch, though.
The dogs. Judd Hirsch, sorry, yes.
But Judd Hirsch driving them around, I don't know why I kind of like that. I like when he hijacks the bus and everything. And wasn't they even say with the license or something like that? Like, or the kids even, some of those little things where it's like, oh, but you don't have a license. Like, do you really think anybody's going to be pulling us over?
It's
like, there's a few moments here and there where they're giving you, they're putting you in this world a little bit where you get some perspective of like, this is a disaster movie.
But the thing is with these is, again, it's like, think about the aftermath of the destruction in the first one with Randy Quaid. And like, you have the moments where like he's driving with his kids and he's hearing the radio and he's like, I told you, I've been telling you this for 59 years. And then you got him like vomiting and you got the son and the other girl and all that sort of stuff. And not Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like they're just, they're there and they're like, I always thought that was Joseph Gordon-Levitt for my entire life, but it's not. But there's that human element to it where you kind of like, you know, even like I think of the bit where like Will Smith is like walking through the desert. And they're like, they pick him up like, soldier, there's a base around here, and they get him in the car. Like, here you've just got random kids thrown into it. Like, the moment when Judd Hirsch is on the boat and he's like, oh, this is definitely bigger than the last one. He's got a fucking oil tanker falling towards him, and he's just like, lol, hi, David, guess what? I'm in a bit of danger. Like,
I thought about that line when you were talking about, like, the cheap jokes they have.
It's like there's no sense of fear or peril or anything. Like, Randy Quaid, like, hello, boys, I'm back. Like, I mean, famous moment. The kids, you see the moment, they're there, and you've got the other guy who's like, your father was a hero. Like, you know, and it's like, I know. Like, I mean, it's uplifting. It's like, yeah, fuck America. Like, everybody who watches the original is all like, oh, God, it's so schmaltzy and American. Like, we're the best. But you and I aren't American. Even we watch that movie go, fuck yeah, America. Like, this movie, you're just like, oh, shut up.
I'll say there's some bad subplots going on here too. These pirate guys who have to monitor the drilling. Why do we need these guys in the movie?
The one part that I genuinely laugh at though is the bit where they're drunk and they're all like, "We've lost our gold. We may as well have a drink."
$10 million.
They've called it up to tell them we'll do it for $100 million. They said yes. Like, oh shit! That part's funny.
But like, there's no reason for they're in 2 minutes of this movie. You could easily cut those 2 minutes out and give some development, humanize these characters, like you're saying, a little bit more. The lack of fear. The one character in this movie whose entire purpose is should be to be afraid, Bill Pullman. What does he do? I'm going to go straight into an alien prison and I'm going to confront this thing and basically get choked out. Now he's not afraid anymore. The only character in this movie that's telling you these aliens should be scary is no longer afraid of them.
Yeah.
We get some bad, cheap speeches. Instead of like, today we celebrate Independence Day, we get, it's the 4th of July, let's show them some fireworks. This weird thing with the daughter, Patricia, not wanting Bill Pullman to go, but then he tricks her. It's like, oh, we did a little bit of switch there. I'm going to keep you busy so your dad can get away. It was already a stretch in the first Independence Day to say the president has to fly in the middle of the battle in the first Independence Day, that already was stretching it. Now,
which
20 years later, but it's so much more ridiculous now. No, I gotta be the one to do it. And in the end, he really does nothing that nobody else couldn't have done. He even says in this movie, this is where Roland Emmerich and these six other screenwriters, because there are so many people attached to this movie, couldn't even come up with reasons. There are many reasons, Patricia, why I should be the one to do this. All right, see you later. I'm going. Give us one reason. Why tell us there's all these reasons? Never explain it.
He's also like mentally deranged. He's freaking Secret Service. He's like, take your medication, sir. And he's like constantly looking at Diet Mae Whitman going, loopy, woo.
We get a dog fight. We get everybody on the young adult Hunger Games Divergent crew getting stuck behind enemy lines inside a spaceship, which I want to see the inside of a spaceship. I don't see the inside of a spaceship looks like an alien planet on a soundstage because it doesn't look real. It doesn't look interesting. It's just boring. Then we get another big battle scene. Bill Pullman blows up the inside of the ship. We find out that this fear can be brought to life by Brent Spiner or his Di John Oliver or whatever. I can't take my hands off of it. This fear tells them that it is the ancient enemy of these alien species. Now, this is where I have a bit of a problem because one alien sphere that, for all you know, was coming to attack Earth says, they're the bad guys. Now, how do we know that this isn't Hitler and that the alien queen is Winston Churchill or something like that? We don't. And we talked a little bit in Signs about people poking holes in the movie saying, oh, as if they'd come to a planet that was 70% water. It's like, well, if you're dying and this is the only planet where you could breathe, you'd probably go there. We're not going to live in a place that has lava or deadly creatures with the people who live in the middle of the wilderness or live around a volcano.
Or Australia.
If these aliens are harvesting all these planets, it's probably because they're dying. And I would love to anybody out there to really think, if we found out the human race is going to die tomorrow, our planet was doomed, and we're all going to die, and we find one planet in the entire galaxy that can support human life, you're telling me we're not going to force our way in there a little bit? Yes, we'll absolutely do what these aliens are doing.
I mean,
I sympathize with the aliens in this movie.
I agree with you, but I would say we probably wouldn't destroy their cities without at least attempting to, we're dying. I'd like to think the human race is a little bit more civil than that. But having said that,
I mean, how many years since Roswell? They've been trying to tell us, can we just share the planet with you? That's what Roswell was. Guys, we really just want to share. Just give us a small chunk of New Zealand or something like that. Nobody cares about Saskatchewan, you know?
Tasmania. Snug.
The other thing I do like in this movie, so Judd Hirsch, of course, conveniently ends up here right at the end. David not only is wasting this movie because Jeff Goldblum has nothing interesting to do and he's not the same character, he's literally just standing out in the middle looking through binoculars at the end of this movie as all your young kids are flying around. The alien queen is the only thing that lives through this. She had a shield of her own. Everything inside that ship had a shield of its own. That's why you couldn't destroy anything. You tried setting off bombs inside this thing and a new sphere of what do you call it, shield appeared around it, but the queen has its own. This thing where the hive mind of this is controlling all the ships where they're all circling around it, that's kind of a cool visual. And I also like the visual of everybody on the bus and having to drive where the alien queen is like running around it. It looks really cool with like the alien spider legs and this bus just in the middle of the desert. I also love Jeff Goldblum, his lines like, or what Judd Hirsch or one of them saying, you got to stay behind the yellow line. There is no yellow line. Imagine there's a yellow line. Mm. But in the end, I can't even explain to you after four times watching this movie, what happens to the alien queen. The hero characters who are in these alien ships somehow break free of the hive and the alien queen just drops dead out of nowhere. And then this fear tells you, hello, we come in peace. It's like something out of a bad sci-fi 70s movie.
Yeah.
And by the way, where are we going to go next? Sequel bait. We're going to go to their home world. No, I hate sequel bait. Like I hate sequel bait unless you know there's a... If you're doing Star Wars, you can do sequel bait. Hmm. If you're doing James Bond, you can do sequel bait. If you are making a movie and hoping if we do something and people hate the movie, they may love our sequel bait, I'm going to hate you even more. Because I don't want to see a bad movie just because you're promising something. And in this case, you're promising something that's going in an entirely wrong direction because I already don't want an Independence Day movie that has moon bases and all these ships and all this ridiculous technology and giant alien queens that are 70 feet tall. I still don't want one that's going to be all on an alien planet and nothing on Earth. Done.
They did. I think Roland Emmerich, the plan was he was writing this to be a two-parter. Like they initially were going to
Originally they wanted it.
Yeah, like, why does this sphere come to Earth and it's all like, hey, thanks for nearly killing me on the moon. By the way, these aliens are evil. We've tried to stop them, but, just haven't succeeded, so we thought we'd come and help you. Why don't the humans literally just go, yeah, about that, we beat them with a computer virus. So what have you been doing for the last 20 years? Like, I mean, you know... Like literally the humans beat them with like freaking the I love you virus, which, I mean, again, yeah. everybody points that out as, like, the stupidest plot hole of Independence Day, which it kind of is. But, like, at the same time, it was the 90s computers. Lol, that's funny. But, like, why do the humans need help from a ball when we beat them the last time? And as far as yeah. I can tell in the ending Twice. Of this, because I'm with you, I don't get how they beat the Alien Queen. They don't use this ball to beat the Alien Queen at the end. The, yeah. the Alien Queen is holding the ball, and it rolls it as it dies. So, I'm sorry. 2 humans, 0 aliens, fuck off ball. We have kicked their ass. But this is another one of these movies where it's like massive global destruction on an unforeseen level. Let's all smile and be happy at the end. Well, let's go kick their ass because we're young and hot and sequel time. Like, I need to stop wasting oxygen on this movie, Colin. It's just
please do.
Terrible.
Sadly, this is by far our best reviewed movie of the month. I think everything else was single digits. This is
fucking 29 reviewers, you idiots. 29?
Yeah, it's way too generous.
Although I did a mostly turd the other day here. That deserved a 29 on Rotten Tomatoes. It had Rotten Tomatoes in it, and I don't even eat tomatoes. I don't know how they got in there.
I'm reading one review here. Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian gave it 1 out of 5 stars and said it is planet-smashingly boring sci-fi sequel. Very good. Let's look for IMDb reviews. I think I have one up here. Here we go. What are the fools out there who say this is 10 stars?
Automatically, anybody
say?
Who has given this a 10-star, you're an idiot, and I do not want to associate with you ever, ever.
This person, Aosinasi, wrote... Not as bad as the several negative reviews. Now, 29% is too generous, but I wouldn't call, was that 71% several negative reviews, okay?
Colin, I need to interrupt you. Do not read this person's review because they reviewed Spider-Man No Way Home and said good, but could have done better. Move on from that idiot. That person has no brain.
I'm just seeing they said it's better than the Disney Star Wars trilogy and still attuned with the original story.
I'm sorry.
Better than at least one of the Star Wars Disney movies.
I would gladly watch The Rise of Skywalker on repeat over this movie. The Last Jedi is a genius film compared to this film.
Box office, this didn't do anywhere near as much as the first one. In fact, made about a third across the board is what the original did. Open with $41 million though, which is, I guess, not terrible, but, big story is that this just sort of came out right after Finding Dory, which nobody expected would have made as much money as it did. Finding Dory makes $73 million almost in a second weekend. Biggest Independence Day does 41, $41 million. Way down from the first movie, and it's 20 years later. The Rock's and Kevin Hart's Central Intelligence was third with 18. The Shallows, starring the sister of who is the other Lively that we talked about on 24.
Yep.
Starring Blake Lively's brother's sister, Blake Lively herself. She is also her brother's sister, though. And Matthew McConaughey, who almost was in Speed 2.
Thanks for clearing that up. She's also her brother's sister. Okay.
He is her brother's sister.
Good. I'm also my sister's brother, just so you should know that.
Other movies out this weekend, The Conjuring 2, The Free State of Jones with Matthew McConaughey, Now You See Me 2, X-Men Apocalypse, Ninja Turtles 2, Out of the Shadows, and Warcraft the movie, and Alice Through the Looking Glass. There really were way too many sequels at this time. I think that was one of the things that the movie was said to have like heard it, was that too many sequels around, too many average sequels a problem. Overall... worldwide box office, this makes $389 million. China. This one made, I think, over 800 million. Well, apparently it didn't do well in China. Like, that's the thing. They didn't like the fact that they kind of were tricked into, hey, we got Chinese representation here. Original made over 800 million, by the way. Domestically it makes 103 million. This barely cracked 100 million. The original made over 300 million and was the highest grossing film of the year.
Didn't the original nearly beat Jurassic Park as the, at the time, the number one box office of all time? Nearly?
No, I mean, it was up there. I think it was like a top biggest five opening weekend. I know it had like the biggest opening weekend until The Lost World the year after that. I'm not even going to bother to look. I don't want to waste any more time on this. It wasn't worth anybody seeing, so it's not in the top 10 box office of the year. Plot keywords, let's hope we can find something decent out of this.
My favorite here, Australian actor playing American Character Month, featuring The Dark Knight.
We have anything good?
Prisoners, Avatar, The Way of Water, and The Pacific, and Elvis. What's his face? Butler isn't Australian, is he?
I don't know. Well, Baz Luhrmann's Australian. There's probably Richard Roxburgh's Australian.
Oh, yeah, true. Tom Hanks clearly.
Orphan Boy and Orphan Girl month. Sequel baiting month. Yes. Kung Fu Panda 4 Split. Godzilla King of the Monsters and Lord of the Ring Fellowship of the Ring.
I have not seen a single Kung Fu Panda movie in my life, nor do I plan to. But can I just say right now, Jack Black and Tenacious D's cover of Baby One More Time is one of the greatest covers of all time. Brilliant.
Death of Stepfather month. Oh. Pilot Ejects month. Flyover month. Bombardment month. Binoculars month. Suicide Mission month. Come on, give me something. Burj Khalifa month. Little boy, little girl, teenage girl.
Bilingualism month. There you go. You missed it. Featuring June, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Animal, and Bullet Train.
Villain Not Really Dead cliche month with Baby Driver, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Oh, spoiler. Thanksgiving and The Guest. That's it. I want to bin this movie, and I regret that we had to do it in the first place, so I apologize on behalf of the Oz Network.
This is in, like, Cats territory. This is in emoji movie territory. Zardoz movie. Like, this is one of the worst movies ever made. Is it the worst?
I wouldn't go that far, but it is bad.
I could list a thousand things I would rather do. I would rather get penis surgery than watch this movie. I would rather have sex with Colin than watch this movie. Colin had a bit of a look in his eye there when I said that. I think, like, people who are listening to this going like, oh, maybe I should watch it. Like, just go and get AIDS and don't watch this movie. Like, it's AIDS would be more entertaining than this movie. Just, I'm saying it now. Just, this is why Village Roadshow hasn't invited me back to another movie, because that's my review. That guy said he'd rather get AIDS than watch a movie. Well, I don't think this is a Village Roadshow movie, was it? So, just don't watch this movie. Don't.
Next month, we're going to get into Planet of the Apes movies, but I actually want to talk about something more important, which is, what are we going to do next year for Bad Movie Month? Now, I had two ideas, and I probably mentioned them in passing so far, but one would be Bad Superheroes Movie Month. So we could do Madam Web, because that's a movie that's screaming to have a month dedicated to it. There could also be Elektra in there, Morbius, could find something else. Or we do Bad Nicolas Cage Movie Month, which... funny enough, sort of comes out of the idea that Jamie shared this movie, which I found is a movie that people love as a bad movie. This is like the way that we love Batman and Robin or even Speed 2. People are like, no, this Nicolas Cage movie, Vampire's Kiss, is brilliant bad movie. But there's a couple other Nicolas Cage movies we could obviously throw in there. I've been making small lists on these. Do either of those interest you, or you have a separate idea?
I don't really have an idea. Bad Sequel Month is another one you could always easily do. I don't know. Like
Wicker Man, if it was Nicolas Cage.
The other option is we could just literally look at the Razzies and go, like, just choose four Razzie winners for best pictures. Those two are good ideas. Like, I mean, I'd probably rather the Nicolas Cage one, just because I think we love Nicolas Cage. And I mean, I just see the Nicolas Cage memes. And I remember watching like a hour long video once. It was just like Nicolas Cage-isms for like all the things, and they're from so many movies I would have never seen. So like Wicker Man, the bees, and it's the vampire, the one where he goes like A B C D. I think that might be the vampire one. I'm not sure.
Maybe that was a clip Jamie showed.
But Nicolas Cage. See if we remember it in about 8 months' time when we work out our 2025.
So we got 24 going on right now. We have, I think, The Amazing Race still going on. We've probably already done reviews of Kong and Godzilla and Ghostbusters. And next week we start Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I won't take too much time.
Starting with the Mark Wahlberg one? I thought we were doing...
I thought we were starting with Rise, because if we start with the Mark Wahlberg one, the new movie will be out by the time we cover the first one, I think.
So
I say we start with Rise, because that's what I want to actually want to watch. Well, there only are three. No, we're going to do the Mark Wahlberg. I thought that was the fourth one we were going to do. That was like our bonus episode.
No, I thought we were starting with Mark Wahlberg because that was...
I don't want to watch that one first. We can start with that one first if you want.
It doesn't make sense to do that at the end.
All right, then we're prolonging Bad Movie Month and doing the Mark Wahlberg one.
Of these that I've seen, by the way. I've not seen any of the other three, so...
That does in a way work out because I love the classic Planet of the Apes movies. I've just rewatched them for, I don't know, the fifth or sixth time. I'm in the middle of reading the Planet of the Apes novel that everything is based on. I am getting ready to watch all the other movies. I'm watching the Planet of the Apes animated TV series from the 70s. I'm watching the Planet of the Apes live action TV series from the 70s. So if we get the Mark Wahlberg, I'm more onto this because we get Mark Wahlberg over and done with, I won't be burned out by the time we actually get to the new Planet of the Apes movie.
I mean, I've seen on Letterboxd you're watching this. And also, one star for this movie, Colin, why didn't you give it half a star for Independence Day? I realize you can't do 0 stars on Letterboxd, so I have to give Independence Day Surgeons a half star.
Judd Hirsch gets a half star himself.
Yeah, my mum used to love the original. I remember on her VHS shelf growing up, she had like all the Planet of the Apes movies, like the old ones. I never saw them, but I remember watching the Mark Wahlberg one with my dad, and I didn't really have an opinion on it because I had no connections to the original. So everyone goes off about the shitty ending, and I'm just like, oh, there's an ending, cool, all right. I mean, again, Estella Warren, I don't know why I'm weirdly excited to talk about her. Former Canadian artistic swimming national champion, but I just want to point out, like, we talk about, you know, we Jim Carrey, we did Anniversary Month, right? Like, has anyone had a bigger 1994? Has, like, can we just point out that Estella Warren's, like, blockbuster movies that she got started in, Driven, Planet of the Apes, Kangaroo Jack, like, how did this woman have any form of career? Like, I mean, she went from being a pretty good synchronized / artistic swimmer. I mean, she's a very good looking woman, but then she went into 3 of the biggest turkeys of all time. And yet, I weirdly have a cult love of Estella Warren. Like, I mean, I guarantee you her name's been said more times in the last 10 minutes than it has been in the last 20 years. She'll be on next week's episode because she'll just be like, hi, I believe I need to be on this episode. She does have 35,500 followers on Instagram. Good for her. But I don't know. As a Canadian, do you like Estella Warren?
No. she's a terrible actress, but maybe I'll be won over by her. I actually don't mind her in Driven, of all things, but no.
Driven's one of those movies that we need to do for Bad Movie Month one year because it's such a terrible movie.
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah, exactly. I am not a fan of the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie, and I think a lot of that was because I had seen at least the first class of the Planet of the Apes movie before seeing this, but it's also just not a good movie. Who do you want to host it? I mean, I'm okay doing that one because that would mean I get to do Dawn, which is my favorite of the Planet of the Apes movies.
You tell me. I mean, I literally have no connection to any of the Planet of the Apes movies to care. I'll do the
Tim Burton, Mark Wahlberg one. And then you'll do Rise. I'll do Dawn.
I keep forgetting it's
a
Tim Burton. And I get to rant about Tim Burton. We've never done a Tim Burton movie before. One of the most overrated people in Hollywood history.
Completely agree.
Yes.
We're going to be anti-Tim Burton next week. So join us for that. And subscribe and follow us. And, just forget this episode ever happened. We apologize.
My name
is Colin, and bring back Mae Whitman.
My name is Ben, and
thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time. Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favorite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah.
If you answered yes to 1, 2, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon. That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made.